The Catholic Church was a longtime adversary of democratic-leaning forces in France. What role did the church play in the tensions of 1871?
Well, that's a complicated story because, in fact, the Archbishop of Paris, who's executed as a hostage on May 24th by the Communards, was a Gallican in that he was, you know, against the Pope, and he was against, for example, the doctrine of papal infallibility, and had been more or less against the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception. But the church was identified with the fancy folk of Paris, and they had their weddings and their baptisms and their funerals in La Madeleine, among other churches in the West. Remember, the western part of Paris was extremely more friqué, comme on dit en français, more prosperous, more wealthy than the eastern proletarian quartier populaire districts. And there had been a rapid increase in the number of priests and nuns in the religious congregations that were resented by ordinary people. The Catholic Church had a monopoly over the education of girls and young women, which lagged behind that of men. So from the point of view of ordinary people in Paris, the Catholic Church was allied with the Second Empire, which indeed it had been, and they entered into an adversarial relationship with the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. During the Paris Commune. But it's more complicated than that. In some cases, you had National Guardsmen fighting inside of the Commune, coming in to meet in clubs, which met, after all, in churches, like Saint-Eustache, which were the biggest places that you could meet, and suddenly coming upon some priest who had given them their first communion. So it's complicated. Mm-hmm. But that, essentially, that was the role of the church, mm-hmm. as it was perceived by working people, and particularly women, by the way, who wanted the right to have to divorce, etc.
Did the Paris Commune accomplish any of its revolutionary goals?
Well, they didn't have much time.
Right.
You know, they did a few, the most famous, of course, they abolished night baking because you had all these bakers trying to heat up croissants for the wealthy people and not just the wealthy people. But they did some progressive things. They set up nurseries for working women. They made sure that unionized women were making and repairing the uniforms of the National Guard. But, you know, the guns of the enemy were drawing closer and closer, and they were shelling Paris almost from the beginning of the whole thing, from the beginning of April. And it's amazing. They disputed. They didn't all have the same ideology. There were some who were Jacobins, who were kind of radical centralizers. There were some socialists. There were a smattering of anarchists. You had some moderate Republicans who only wanted the right to vote, that Paris should have a mayor for whom they would vote. And it's amazing what they did accomplish in such a short period of time.
So why then did it end so quickly and in such a bloodbath?
Well, it ended in a bloodbath because that was what Thiers was planning to do. When he pulls soldiers out of Paris, he wants to build up his army to 130,000 men. Bismarck, who was the chancellor of the new German Republic, let freed French soldiers, troops, so they could help crush the Commune. And so by May 21st, they have at least 130,000 men, well-armed men who had been taught that Parisians were craven reptiles and that they were godless socialists and they were drinking the wine of the rich and all of this stuff. And they were really to smash some heads. And so far as the Commune went, they only had nominally they might have had on the rolls of the National Guard all men between the ages of 21 and 40. But in reality, only about 25,000 men fought for the Commune until the end. And the soldiers used the big power arteries, the boulevards created by Baron Georges Haussmann in the rebuilding of Paris in the 1850s and 60s. This is for tourist Paris today, or the Grand Boulevard, but these were created to bring more light into Paris, more health into Paris, but also you couldn't build barricades across big boulevards. And the troops of Versailles had other advantages, too. They would climb up on buildings. They would take buildings next to the barricades of the Commune and shoot down on them. And it was, you know, it was a bloodbath. The Commune basically had no chance for victory. And it's amazing how many people held out until the end. There were many women fighting until the end. It's a it was a ghastly thing. And it unleashed the demons of the 20th century, as I said, beginning.
Right. And you were saying that there was a lot of random killing or just killing because of who you were or...
Yeah. I mean, you could get killed for just being in the wrong place in the wrong time because the troops of Versailles targeted certain neighborhoods that were identified with the political left. Montmartre, where the commune started, Belleville up in the north, these are mostly places in the northeastern quadrant of Paris, the northeastern quartier, and also the 13th arrondissement, again in eastern Paris, that on the left bank. And so if you had rough hands of work, you could be killed. If you spoke French with an accent from the faubourg, from, you know, the edge, the margins of city life, you know, you could be killed. There was one man who was shot down because they asked, "What's your profession?" He said, "I'm a Mason." And so the officer from Versailles said, "So it's Masons who are going to be running France now, up against the wall." And that was the end of him. It was serendipity. If you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, that was the end, as we say in French, la fin des haricots, that's the end of the green beans, up against the wall. Not all of the generals were mass murderers, but what they did is they put people on trial 10 seconds or 15 seconds, and then they sent them the most, if you know Paris at all, if you go to Châtelet, which is where a lot of the theaters are now, they put them on trial at Châtelet, and if they were found guilty, and you know many, many, if not most, were, the next thing they were taken in chains to behind the town hall, behind the Hôtel de Ville, into the barracks of Lobo, which is still there, and they were gunned down. And when they couldn't kill enough with rifles, they brought in machine guns. And if you go to the gardens of Luxembourg, and you can see the little children playing with their sailboats and their stuffed animals around the pond, look up, because there's a wall there, and that's where lots of people died too. Mm-hmm. Or at Parc Monceau in the 17th arrondissement, the same thing. So it was a tragic story. The numbers who were killed, the lowest estimate ever, which is inconceivable to me, though one of my friends believes this, one of my colleagues, a very good historian, 8,000. The high estimates were 30,000, which is very improbable. It's about 15,000 to 17,000 people were killed. Many of them died in the fighting, but more of them died in summary executions.
And were the soldiers who killed them, were they ideologically or politically motivated? Were they ordinary people, or were they just...
Well, they were in the army. These were, a lot of them were peasants, as I said before. Many of them were for conservative parts of France, and had drilled into them that the communards were terrible people, and that they were, you know, retaking the values of civilization and slaughtering them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are lots of death out there. But they weren't all doing that. I mean, I have many stories. I couldn't tell them all in this book. I mean, the original manuscript was 1,100 pages, and I cut it down to a mere 500 manuscript pages. But, you know, a lot of good things happen. There are some amazing tales of people just being lucky, running into somebody as they're about to be executed who had the same trade, for example, and who manages to save them. Somebody was about to be shot. He was waiting in line not for a movie ticket, or waiting in line not for a theater ticket. He was waiting in line to be killed. And he was number 4. And it was going to go 3-2-1, and that's the end of the green beans. And the next thing he knows, 2 minutes later, he's having a drink. And I would have had several under these circumstances in a cafe across from the Garden of Luxembourg. The cafe is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, lots of amazing things happen. And that's why the story, I wanted to tell this story. And it's, you know, a sad story. And I tried to make it a gripping story. And I'm on to something else now. But, you know, I go up periodically to the wall of the Fédérés, the Mur des Fédérés. And that's where lots of people were killed after the fighting, slaughtered after the fighting in Père Lachaise Cemetery. And there is a plaque there in honor of the people who were shot there. And on May Day, people used to go up there. But when I go up there, you know, and I do have a lot of nostalgia for the commune, it's if I can hear, you know, Thomas Wolfe, something out of Thomas Wolfe, totally different context. Oh, lost and by the wind grieved, ghost, come back again.
Is that how most French look back on the commune today?
It used to be very contentious, but the commune now has become part of the national narrative. So even Nicolas Sarkozy, you know, the once president and hopefully never again president of France, even he had to you know, make an allusion to the Paris Commune as being part of the national narrative. Until World War I, particularly in the 1870s and the 1880s, the French Reich considered the commune sort of an apocalyptical vision of what lay in store for them if you let ordinary people have their way.
What a fascinating story. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us.
Pas de quoi. Merci. Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup.
It's nice to be here.